Welcome to the Open House Podcast. Conversations exploring life, faith and hope with Stephen O'Doherty.
As something of a touchstone for the very definition of genius, physicist Stephen Hawking certainly became a household name. While few people understood his scientific breakthroughs as a theoretical physicist and cosmologist, it was exciting nevertheless to live at the same time as such an outstanding intellect. His book, A Brief History of Time, was a massive bestseller, but Stephen Hawking used to joke that it was one of the most purchased but least read books ever. His research concerned the frontiers of human thought in theoretical physics. His mathematical models for the origins of the universe goes to the very intersection of science and religious belief. Hawking often spoke about God or the concept of a creator while making his own position clear as an atheist. And while it's inevitable that eminent scientists of this nature will be asked about religion, but is the nature of God a question for scientists alone? On Open House, we spoke to Reverend Chris Mulheron. He's the executive director of ISCAST, a network of Christians in science and technology. Our conversation roamed across the frontiers of time and space, science and religious belief.
The problem with science is it can go so far, and you know, the physicists at the quantum level, the very small, and at the cosmological level, the very big, they reach the limits. But science can go no further, and only religious answers of one sort or another can come in there. Or you can say there are no more answers, which is what you're ultimately bound to say if you're going to rule out God.
Yes. He was, of course, asked a lot about this question. You can well understand why. He seemed to say science had explained that there wasn't the need for a creator. So he said this to El Mundo in 2014 in an interview. Before we understand science, it's natural to believe that God created the universe, but now science offers a more convincing explanation. Is that what science provides?
Well, no, I don't think so. I think that Stephen Hawking and more recently Lawrence Krauss are doing a little bit of tricky card playing when they say that science has answered the ultimate questions.
Why is it tricky card playing?
Well, I think that Lawrence Krauss is an easy example because he wrote his book called The Universe from Nothing, which, if I could put it a little bit tritely, redefined the word nothing and then said the universe can come from nothing. But nothing in Lawrence Krauss's mind is the laws of physics. And of course, the philosophers and theologians then say, well, hold on, that's not what we meant by nothing. Where did the laws of physics come from?
Yes, because the laws of physics is a something.
The laws of physics is definitely a something, and science simply can't answer that most fundamental question, which sometimes sounds a silly question but is rather profound, which is, why is there something rather than nothing? And that's where, of course, for a Christian, we go to a whole new level of explanation and we start to talk about God the Creator, who is separate from the universe that's created.
Yes, because science, in one way, tries to answer the question why, and it proposes a series of propositions that almost allocates a personality to scientific processes. But it doesn't really answer the question why. The Christian answers the question why in this way: because we were made to know and love God.
Yes.
But the
yes.
scientists will say, look at history or even say evolution, for example, and when I say attribute a personality to it, they sort of say, well, some species developed this characteristic because it was better for them to find a mate, as if there was an intelligence behind that happening. So even science can't really grapple with the question why without positing a sort of a mind behind it.
Yeah, that's right. I think that you need to separate, well, I use an alliterative means of remembering it. You need to separate particles from purposes.
That's nice.
And you need to separate mechanisms from meanings. Yes. Science is great on the mechanisms and the particles, but if you want to talk about purposes and meanings, you have to leave science behind and start to talk about religion or philosophy or something that goes beyond science. Science simply can't answer those questions of purpose.
Hmm. In 1998, in his A Brief History of Time, so he's talking about black holes and the Big Bang and so on, mm-hmm. he said that the understanding of the universe offers a glimpse of the mind of God. Now you say, oh, well, okay, that's really interesting. And in fact, many Christians would say, yes, indeed. The more I find out about science, the more I know about the God who made science.
Yes, I think, I suspect that if Hawking were able to correct us, he'd say, well, that's not quite what I meant. And I think he did say that, actually. It's I think, the last line of that very famous book. He said, if we arrive at the theory of everything, which physics is trying to do, to yes. incorporate all aspects of physics into one theory, if we arrive at the theory of everything, then we will know the mind of God. And I think what he was saying really was, then we wouldn't need a God because we would have answered all those questions that we need a God to answer.
Yes, and indeed in that same interview that I referred to earlier with the El Mundo newspaper in 2014, he said, what I meant by we would know the mind of God is we would know everything that God would know if there was a God, which there isn't. I'm an atheist.
Yes.
From a Christian perspective, let's just analyze that for the moment. It goes right back to Genesis, doesn't it? That knowledge of everything that God knew was the one thing that God didn't want Adam and Eve to actually have.
Yes, I guess there are different types of knowledge. I'm not sure that we can criticize scientific knowledge. Knowledge, I'm not talking about what we do with it, but scientific knowledge, I don't think it's sinful to know about.
Okay, I wasn't saying that, but fair cop.
No. Of course, what we do with it is the problem, and we finish up in hot water if we try and simply take scientific knowledge and assume that whatever we do with it is good. And that's one of the big problems in scientific development is the ethical questions that science raises.
Yes, and in Genesis, the real issue was knowledge of good and evil. And you could say, you look back through history at the way scientific advancements have been applied, and it can easily be for both, which I suppose your best theory about that is just human nature itself. And yet, to ponder back to the garden, that's not how it was supposed to be.
No, and I guess that's a clear example where you go beyond the bounds of science. Science simply can't answer the questions about what science should be used for.
Scientific inquiry in itself, though, it can't either prove or disprove God. You end up within a whole line of inquiry about what faith is.
Yes, and you also raise the question about how much science depends on something that looks a little bit like faith. I dare not use the word because it raises so many orange flags for people, but all human knowledge is a commitment to what we think is true, even though we can't ultimately prove it. You see, climate change is a great example of science. I think that we are drastically changing the climate. That seems to be the considered opinion of 90% of or 99% of climate experts. Mm. And yet, we all know that if you go up to one of them and say, prove to me that we're causing climate change, they will say, well, no, I can't prove it to you in that sort of way. That's not how science works. But it is our considered opinion and we're willing to stake our lives on it. You know, now Christians call that faith when they think about their faith in God. It's very similar in science.
Our guest on Open House is Chris Mulheron, a lecturer at Australian Catholic University, also the executive director of ISCAST, which is Christians in Science, which coincidentally has a big conference coming up in Brisbane just in the next few days. Chris, you see enmity between scientists, or particularly scientists with a particularly political view of religion, or a strong atheistic militancy, if you like, about religion. You also see enmity between some Christians and scientists. You talk about climate change. There are many Christians who look at scientists and, I'll use the word, almost demonize them, because for some reason these Christians are not convinced about the changing nature of our climate. So have we been a bit anti? Have some Christians been anti-science in the way that some scientists have been anti-Christian?
Yes, I think so. I would say that we have fundamentalists on both ends of the spectrum. That is to say, atheist fundamentalists who simply close their minds to the possibility that there are religious truths. And I think we also have religious fundamentalists who simply close their minds to things that they see as not glorifying to God or not possible to believe if you're a Christian. And I have different responses to those different groups, but I think both groups are characterized by an unwillingness to consider seriously what the other person is saying. And then in the middle, you have mainstream Christian faith, as it has been for 2,000 years, that has taken seriously the best of human knowledge. Hmm. It's a long time ago, like 1,600 years ago, that Augustine warned Christians about looking foolish by making statements that were, if you like, anti-science. Now, of course, that's not the language that he used then, but science and religion have been in harmony for the most part throughout Christian history.
And yet, to listen to the debate today, you'd think it was quite the opposite, and it's really reassuring to remind people that there is a big middle ground. So talk to me about the organisation that you're involved with, ISCAST, this fellowship of scientists who have Christian beliefs around the world. When they get together, how do they describe their understanding of their science background and their religious background?
Well, obviously, it's individual to different people, but for the most part, they're characterised by that idea that, well, take Psalm 19, for example, the heavens declare the glory of God. Hmm. You know, that sort of idea. And it's funny, isn't it, that even in that book that epitomizes for many people the conflict between science and faith, Darwin's Origin of Species, opposite the title page of Darwin's Origin of Species, he quoted Francis Bacon, who said, roughly, God has two books, the book of his works, which is the creation, and the book of his word, which is the Bible, and Christians ought to pay due attention to both of them. So there you have this strong statement of the harmony between the book of God's works and the book of God's word. And that is what most scientists who are Christians, that's the sort of model that they would work on. They don't find this fundamental conflict. And in fact, when they do their science, they understand themselves to be exploring the works of God and glorifying God as they do so.
Certainly. Many scientists that I've spoken with over the years say exactly that. And they find it almost impossible. As a musician might say, well, of course, when I'm playing music, I'm using what God has given me to delight in worshipping him in this language. They see science itself as a language of beauty, and mathematics as a language of beauty. Go figure.
That's right, yes.
Back to Stephen Hawking for a moment, though. Hawking once said, I believe the universe is governed by the laws of science. The laws may have been decreed by God, but God doesn't intervene to break the laws. Now, at one level, many Christians would say, yeah, absolutely, God set the universe in motion, and therefore you see the processes playing out. That's entirely in accordance with how God set it in train. Except that at one major point of history, in particular, the birth, then the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ, God massively intervenes in history. He breaks his own laws. And that, from a philosophical point of view, is really something to get your mind around.
Yes, there's a lot of things to unpack there.
Yes, there is.
Let me say one thing first about that view. I don't think a thoroughly theologically astute Christian would say that God set the universe up and then left it to do its own thing until he made these sort of interventions. That would be a deist view, but not quite a theist
view. Right, excellent.
A Christian, if they think about it, a Christian view of God is that God is sustaining the universe all the time.
Yeah, so the phrase there is the immanence of God, that he continues to be at work.
Absolutely.
Yes, I love that. That's essential.
If God drops dead, then the universe drops dead. It's not that God can just sort of drop dead and leave the universe to keep on ticking.
Excellent.
So that'd be one thing I'd say. The other thing I'd say is Science works on the principle of methodological naturalism, and that basically, in simple words, means when the scientist walks into the laboratory, whether they're a Christian or an atheist doesn't matter, because when they do their tests, their laboratory experiments or whatever it is, they assume that God is not mucking about with the experiment. That is to say, they assume no miracles are occurring. They assume they're observing the natural workings of the universe, following the laws that God has put in the universe. Therefore, atheist and Christian can work side by side and assume that God isn't interfering. But that doesn't mean that he can't interfere. And if God wants to, quote, interfere, then God can do that any time he likes. And of course, the Christians have different views about the prevalence of miracles.
Yes.
At the Pentecostal end, Pentecostal people expect to see miracles all the time. At the other end, some Christians would say, well, miracles are extremely rare, but we certainly have one on Calvary 2,000 years ago.
Yes.
Either way, the point is that Christians believe in a God who can intervene in the, quote, natural workings of the universe.
Yes, and then just to close the loop thoroughly on our theology, perhaps, you might take the view that it was mankind that broke the model when we turned away from God. God then intervened in order to fix it. But the price still had to be paid, which was what Calvary was all about. So there is God not denying himself, but in fact being subject to the rules that he set up and yes, and rescuing us. What a story.
Absolutely. God, in a sense, obeying those rules of justice. I mean, you can't quite put it that way when you're talking about God. But yes, God subjecting himself to those rules of justice, and in a way that we barely begin to understand, satisfying those rules so that humanity can live in harmony with God. That's what we see on Calvary, and we give glory to God for that.
Yes, and it breaks history, it breaks everything. And you could say that even the scientists at the time, those who tested that theory, those who pierced the side with their sword, those who saw the fluid coming out indicating that death had indeed taken place. I mean, it's not as if there aren't eyewitness accounts that these days we might regard as reliable evidence that something had occurred in the street down the street or across the other side of the world through journalistic and evidence-based accounts. So you can't really explain it away with science either, can you?
No, you can't. You simply can't. If you understand history to be a science of sorts, the very, very best evidence that we have is that Jesus rose from the dead. Now, the only reason that you wouldn't believe that, historically speaking, is if you had a prejudice against people rising from the dead. You know, there are numerous thousands of manuscripts, records of biblical writings, New Testament writings, while other writings of the time there are, you know, a few hundred perhaps. So there's an enormous amount of historical evidence. But if you believe that miracles don't happen, then of course you discount all that evidence.
Discover more Open House podcasts at openhousecommunity.com.au.